Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, this is Winners and Sinners, where we look back on the week that was, but with a few twists. And we are delighted, as ever, to be joined by Off the Ball's Ger Gilroy and Today FM's Alison Curtis. Hi, guys.
Hiya.
Hello. Everybody good this week?
We look spring-like, all of us, collectively,
we
do. Don't
it's
we?
It's spring-like outside, isn't it?
It's amazing.
It makes a difference, doesn't it?
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of difference. You remember getting up in the, you know, the dark distant past of like 3 weeks ago, when you come to work and it would be dark.
Yeah.
Well, this is a couple of weeks where it starts to get bright and you're coming in the brightness. It's a complete change to your life.
It is a complete change to your life.
So is that our winner for the week?
Yes, that's what we're done.
Thank you. Thanks a million, both to Alison Kerr. Okay.
Alison, your winner this week. Sorry, I just caught you on the hop there.
Leo DiCaprio's mustache.
Ooh.
Not just him, his mustache. So he was at the Oscars in that, I know it's a week ago now, but he became Conan O'Brien, the host, was like, we need another meme. And he's like the king. Leo's the king of them anyway. We all know.
Yeah.
So he created a new one. But everyone was a little bit shocked, including myself, that we're like, do I think he's handsome now? Like, what's happening here? And the reaction to his mustache was hilarious. That's why it's my
winner. He is having a bit of a second coming, isn't he? As in, I don't know what I'm trying to say here exactly, but he was a very handsome young man. I watched Titanic quite recently.
Yes, I never found him.
Oh, really?
Cute.
No, he was a spectacularly beautiful young man, I would suggest. But he has looked a bit, we're in dangerous territory now, and I'm aware of this, rattled. Lately.
So the world exploded.
Ger and Shane are being really quiet.
I've lost. You guys
What's
are glazing over.
Rattled.
Rattled.
Can you?
Rattled. He looked. Do you know? You know what rattled means, Shane?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
In need of a good moisturiser.
Yes.
He looked okay, a bit. Okay,
he looked
sorry,
a bit
strung out.
Puffy and like he was hard living almost bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas possibly. Now he looks like something out of Gunfight from the OK Corral.
He just looks incredible. So
there's
the reaction,
a Western kind of vibe to it,
yeah,
isn't there?
And a lot of people saying that he looks like he's just going to go and get the gold at any expense.
Yeah.
But I love this one. It's like, if I was to say what was really on my mind, I would get into big trouble, was one of the reactions. And another person was like, do I like mustaches now? So everyone's reacting to it.
Mustaches in general are having a total comeback, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah,
I think so.
They are.
All around
without
me.
Without the beard, just mustaches.
Yes, you see young men. I walked through Trinity quite recently, and every second hip young man in Trinity College Dublin is sporting a massive kind of Freddie Mercury style mustache.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a thing.
I mean, it's so, I mean, because facial hair for a while in Ireland, it was only if you were a member of a trade union or a leader of a trade union.
Or a trad band.
Or a trad band that you had facial hair. And now it's, I mean, I have it myself.
Well,
now.
I argue, I'm going to just be honest here and say, I think it improves every situation. As in Lionel Messi, now he's handsome because he has a beard.
It as I can tell you, as a man in his 50s, it hides a multitude.
That's not going to grow mine.
I was about to say, I wish we had facial hair because that we could hide I could hide my jawline. But then I realised I am in fact growing facial hair now, and it is. And it is something that I am battling on a daily basis.
Yeah, well, you know, the car in the light and tweezers. By the
I have a tweezers where used to be an ashtray is now a tweezer holder.
Yeah, exactly.
For many women,
and there's no shame.
There is a bit of shame, but no, there should be no shame.
I think he looks handsome.
So he's growing it for a new movie that he's doing with Scorsese or however we want to say it.
The
now,
last one, right?
With Jennifer Lawrence, and it looks amazing. It's like a proper horror movie, and it's set in like old-timey European. So it looks great. So that's why he has it.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's also started to go out with people older than 27,
which I think is great.
Kind of,
is he growing up in general? He can now grow a mustache. His girlfriends are almost 30.
This year, so yeah.
Interesting.
When I first grew my mustache, I really liked it, and then my son told me I looked like Stalin.
You should never listen to people in your family.
He kind of had a point. I needed to in and out.
You
a bit
do have a Bolshevik shirt on today.
I suppose I do.
You do.
Yeah.
But have you ever shaved yours off and then had a very negative reaction? Like when my daughter was three, my husband shaved it. He's only done it about twice in the last 15 years.
Does he have a mustache or a beard or something?
Santa beard.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
And your daughter hated it.
She cried when he was three and he did it. And then when we first all got COVID, not knowing what COVID was in 2019, he was like, I need to rip every ounce of hair off my body because I'm so hot. And he shaved it then as well and turned the corner. My daughter and I were like, okay, we had to.
Oh, your face. Oh, we can see your face.
I forgot. It looks great. Looks great.
Whoa, shots fired.
I know.
The world is going to hell in a handcart.
Sorry,
like,
Tony.
The only time any of my children ever cried when they looked at my face was I got my eyebrows tinted when one of my children was quite young and I came home with them and my then three-year-old cried and said this, "Ah, mommy, why do you have clown face?" And that's what he said. And he was right, kind of, as well. I kind of did have
the darndest things.
I did kind of have clown face.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah, it wasn't a good thing. So that's a winner, is it?
Okay, we're all agreeing. I think that's
he
a
does
winner.
Look good. He looks less spongy or something.
He's been
working out.
Or he's had his facial fillers dissolved, maybe.
I think he's just lost a little bit of weight and he's looking after himself, maybe.
Good for him. Yes. Good for you, Leo.
I must try it.
He's on the programme.
Ger Kilroy, what is your winner of the week?
Is it memory? Is it the power of football? I'm not sure. I brought props. So have a look. There's a series of photographs. We got a letter into Off the Ball. My name is Gregor. I'm 43 years old and I live in Krakow in Poland. I'm proud father of two boys, 13 and 10 years old. And then he tells us who he works for in the accounting department. I'm an avid football fan. I'm interested in everything about football in all over the world. I used to play football as goalkeeper. I also worked as youth and goalkeeping coach. And then it's addressed to Dear Mr. Giles, to John Giles.
Wow.
You are world's football legend. And I would like to ask you for signing for me in close photos, if possible, with a marker on the outside.
Wow.
Now, obviously, John can't do this for us anymore because he's retired and he's enjoying his retirement. But somebody went to the trouble of, at 43, of finding these pictures of John Giles, which are absolutely class, cutting them up, sending us a fiver.
I was looking for the pictures and a fiver popped out.
Cover postage?
Yes, I do not have a valid Irish stamp. Therefore, I include €5 to cover postage.
There's something very wholesome about that, isn't there?
And it's Giles as a teenager all the way up to his time as the player manager
of Ireland.
You better deliver on this now.
Well, I can't. I've already written that. I'm sorry, he's retired. But could he do it? We'd have to send it to Birmingham. Maybe we'll get in touch with his son.
You know, that's the magic of radio. Someone is going to say, I will call into News Talk and I will go up to OTB and I will take this with your fiver and I will be in Birmingham. Something will happen. There's something a bit extraordinary in this, isn't there?
I think
a handwritten letter, the trouble that was taken here.
Giles made his debut for Ireland in 57, I want to say.
Yeah, around there.
And so still in 2026, someone is like, I'd love to just get your signature on these photographs. And like
69 years ago.
There's
That's
nothing,
incredible.
You know, he's not going to sell them on eBay for a fortune. No one's like, it's genuinely because he's interested in
a fan of football.
He's just a fan of football.
So it can't stop here, the story now.
And sharing this with his kids.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know if all the teenagers
and
are
I wonder,
like,
is it partly to do with his kids? He's going, you know what? Let's just reach out and see what happens, kids. You never know.
Yeah.
And sometimes send, you know, lots of famous people still have a letter that they got from JFK or something. Do you know what I mean? Because they wrote to somebody and something came back and then they talk about it as ad. I've never done this kind of thing in my life. But this is a thing, isn't it?
Shane Hannan, Off the Ball weekend producer here on News Talk, said that he's written away to loads of people. So I think he had, at one stage, he had all of the astronauts who were available had written back to him. The first person who ever wrote back to him was Franz Beckenbauer. And the second person who ever wrote back to him was Donald Trump with signed photograph.
No way, he got Donald Trump?
Yeah, yeah. When he was
You see, there is a value in doing this. And it's nostalgia, it's commitment. And people like Donald Trump even are moved, I think, a little bit by getting a letter from a kid, or in this case a dad.
You have to have a heart of stone not to respond.
There's something in it.
I think there's something about memory and recollection and it being against the overwhelming
isn't it some testimony to John Giles as a footballer?
Oh, it's incredible.
It's incredible that,
echoing down the ages
50 years pretty much maybe almost 50 years after he retired as a footballer, he's still recalled in those kind
of
terms.
Yeah.
In Yeah, in Poland.
I also think
Ireland did play a lot of games in Poland.
We probably did, yeah.
That there is something in a handwritten letter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think if that man had emailed or something, you may not have even registered.
Report spam. Yeah. Phishing.
Do you know what I mean? But I think on some human level, we recognise that a handwritten letter is a bigger connection than a text or a...
That's true.
Well, it takes time and it's thoughtfulness. Nobody would like to get a letter from mine. For me, my handwriting is like a doctor or a serial killer. It's really awful.
You've brought back a memory for me. I've been on holidays in Corktown, late 70s, and Ray Clements, who was the Liverpool and England goalkeeper, was staying in the hotel next door. In a time when top paid English footballers and English internationals went to Corktown for their holidays. And I waited outside while he was having his breakfast, and then he came out in a yellow Liverpool tracksuit on his holidays. And he just very nonchalantly took my... I had a shoot with a photo of him. And he took
You were
it
probably and, 8, 10, something like that?
Yeah, 9 or 10. 19. 8 or 9, I'd say. And,
Shane, did you nearly lose your life?
I was like just, oh my God, it's Ray Clements. And he signed it, and he didn't make small talk.
Do you still have that?
I saw it not that long ago. I must have it somewhere.
Because you wouldn't have thrown that away.
My brother cut it out and put it on a bit of cardboard and had it up on the wall. So I must have it somewhere, definitely. So, yeah.
There's something in this.
I think so, yeah. I think... I do think that, I was thinking it's not just sport, like people feel the same about musicians and, in Shane's case, future presidents of the United States, TV hosts.
Astronauts.
Yes, yeah. But it is that connection that we're not just atoms bumping up against each other.
Yeah. Even famous people, even people with huge status respond to this very simple human. There's something...
Well, that's why I think people still make an effort on red carpets and go over to the line where they can actually reach fans. And like Taylor's always been... Taylor Swift, first name basis.
Yeah,
always,
so I saw that.
I knew what you meant.
Always been noted for taking time to do it. So yeah, it means a lot to people.
It does mean a lot to people. There is something... rather
okay,
lovely,
we'll take a short break there, and we're going to get the news headlines. Stay with us, Alison and Ger. Let's get the news headlines. Here's Alan Cantwell.
Now, you're very welcome back to Winners and Sinners, and we're into the sinners section of the evening. Ger, what have you got for us?
So AI, right? might seem a little bit inside baseball, but Peter van der Meersch, who used to be the chief executive of Media House Ireland, was yesterday suspended from his current role with the publisher. And the phrase is, he wrongly put words into people's mouths through the use of AI. I think, so this isn't finger wagging at him for falling into this and making this mistake. It's like, there but for the grace of the journalism gods go any of us who was like, you're reading a brief, it's coming through really quickly. Somebody says something, you report what they've said. It turns out that the AI hallucinated this and it wasn't actually a comment. It was a paraphrasing. So he was actually investigated by a media house company that he used to be the publisher of. The NRC is the name of the organization that he used to be in charge of. And to them, they took 53 blog posts and some articles he'd printed in media house papers and found that 15 of the 53 blog posts had quotes that weren't real, that were AI. He'd been using ChatGPT, Perplexity, and Google Notebook. And, obviously he'd had a very senior role in the Irish business, but had subsequently gone on to have a fellow in journalism and society with Media House. So it's like a kind of emeritus position. He's 65. You've done great work for us over the years. You go and tell us about the future of journalism. And here he is now becoming, a textbook case of
perils of the future of journalism.
Yeah. Yeah. So... I know there's a lot of schadenfreude out there when something like this happens.
I know Peter. He used to be my boss. I used to write for the Sindo, so I've known him for years, and I actually like him very much.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, and I think there, but I wrote mostly a personal column, so I wasn't really quoting other people that much or anything, so I didn't have anything to ChatGPT it. But I'm sure so many people use it to search for various things, and this is the danger, isn't it? It's throwing up shite. It's throwing up stuff that's not real.
Yeah,
and we are. I think it's quite frightening. It's slightly off your topic, but this morning on Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham, I don't know if you guys saw, he had a robot in, like a walking robot, like a little thing. And the idea is this robot will do your housework and will wash your dishes and fold your clothes and la, la, la. And it was walking around out there in our office. And I wasn't here at that hour of the morning, but I saw videos and pictures of it. And I thought to myself, and it's the first time I've ever thought this to myself, I thought, oh my God, these things are going to start by washing our dishes. They're going to end up as an army that's unfightable. Because if you can produce gazillions of these things, like, could you go hand to hand with a slightly bigger version of this?
No.
Not in a million years.
But I would like something to wash my dishes.
No, I know, but I think they're sucking us in with the dishwashing. But like, you literally, we are looking at like potentially mass-produced army. Like,
my brain anyway, hasn't gone that far.
Mine went there only this morning for the first time because I saw it.
We can pull the plug out though, can we?
The problem is
sorry, I'm looking for the footage, but one of the robots went mad in a restaurant in China, and it took four or five of them to actually
suppress
them. Yeah, yeah.
And to me, technology is moving at such a pace, and AI is the logarithmic acceleration of that pace. It's now more intelligent than us, and it's also become, it's like an omnidroid from The Incredibles. It's becoming more clever. It's learning as it goes.
It is.
It's
that doing things scary, that it,
remember the guy who was one of the inventors, and he said it's doing things it's not supposed to do. It learned a language it wasn't supposed to learn. We didn't ask it to do this. It's doing things itself, self-generated.
What was
learning
it? Was it HAL in 2001?
It's prescient, and I'm in kind of keeping with your ChatGPT AI. Just because we can do things, is there a question whether or not we should do things?
I have to be honest, unless I'm aware of it, I'm not using it. But I was at a dinner party recently and they're like, and someone mentioned ChatGPT. And I was like, maybe this is a bad thing to admit.
Consciously, you've never.
Yeah, and
you don't have the app on your phone or whatever.
No, and she did a long list of things. She goes, see what we'll come back with, which was actually something we were talking about before we came to air. And to do with children's education and things like that. And it came back with this huge thing. And I was just like, my attention span was like, I just pour me another bit of Chardonnay. I don't care what it's saying. Like, I don't have it in me to be fascinated enough by it. So therefore, I'm not getting scared, whereas I should be. Absolutely.
Or more basic point.
Go.
And it's an old adage of journalism. You check, and you check, and you check again.
Yeah.
And I have to say, look, I like you, I don't actively seek out, but I know when I Google stuff now that it is AI.
Yeah, definitely.
Produces stuff, but
You can't trust it.
I don't trust it. I always try and source where it came from. Or
when you search on Google now, even before, obviously, you use something like ChatGPT, but on regular Google, on Chrome or whatever, it will give you the AI version. AI response first now, ahead of the other responses, which are now lower down. Of course, it's really environmentally unfriendly. The amount of energy that AI-based searches use as compared to old search engines is monster. But I do worry on the big picture.
You make me worry.
No, I'm not trying to. This is a sinner. So yes. I do worry on the big picture thing that we have technology that is now sort of beyond our ability to control it because it is very clever. And we've never been the fastest or the strongest animal on this planet. We were the top of the food chain because we were the cleverest thing on the planet. We are no longer the cleverest thing on the planet. And this is a bit sort of doom goblin-y. But
Terminator 2, yeah.
But I worry. And I think the fact that a journalist has fallen for a bit of nonsense AI is you know, foolish and he, you know, should have known better and all that, but there before the grace of the journalist gods. But the big picture is we are now running a slow second behind technology as the human race. And I don't really think that we know where it's going to end.
More Chardonnay, maybe?
I think it's all it's
Jesus,
called for.
This was the worst sinner than I was kind of hoping for. I'm now completely depressed.
Yeah, Alison, let's change the subject. Okay. What's your sinner of the week?
So you've probably covered it quite a bit, but it's the demolition of the house in Meath. So, and just reading through it all yesterday and today, I think the thing that makes it a sinner for me is just the waste. Like the waste of people's time, their like the heartache around it, and the actual physical waste in the building. And it just seems... Now, Rose has come out and said she was hoping it would go to charity. The demolition's obviously started. There's like drones, which I also find distasteful, of the taking it down. They admit they did something wrong. They definitely did do something wrong. But it just seems like how many court cases they've had, how much money. It just seems waste, 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 waste. That's why I feel like it is a sinner. Now, I know there are rules are there to be followed.
But what's the alternative, you know? Yeah. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, like, you know, we should give this house to a charity and so on. You're letting something that is illegal stand.
I know.
And if you do that, then you're setting a precedent.
I know.
So sometimes the state has to take a stand. In my view, the state hasn't taken enough stance when it's come to, like, one of the reasons we're a mess in terms of public transport and all that is because we don't do planning well in this country. We've ignored planning. We've let people ride a horse and carriage, a horse and four through through planning. So I don't think we should criticise the state or the local authority for actually, for once, saying, we have rules here.
Depressing to me.
Can I say, I kind of see your point, though, and I do, in this sense, that the house, I believe, is demolished to sort of draw a marker or lay down a marker for people and to sort of teach them perhaps a lesson, but to lay down a marker for other people that might be thinking, oh, I'll just throw something up in my field.
Yeah.
And I think that was the reason. But I also thought, when I saw the demolition, the side being taken down or whatever, in a housing crisis, it's a massive house.
You could house 6,000 square feet.
You could house a lot of people in it. Yeah. And I looked at it and
you house one family in it. This isn't a tenement. You're not going to get any more than one family.
But I did think to myself also that it was wasteful, that there's a perfectly nice looking house there that's big and whatever. I kind of see it both ways. I kind of also felt,
find the story,
and I really hope, I have to say, although I haven't followed the court case up until relatively recently, all the previous court cases as closely perhaps as some people have, I really hope the grounds for denying it planning permission were sound, because otherwise I think it's...
Well, they clearly were because they've gone through every...
And that's what I'm presuming from all the court cases.
I find it way more depressing and tragic and unfortunate that there's thousands of empty homes and thousands of derelict homes that could be used, that were built with planning permission and have just been let decline.
Absolutely.
I think that's way more than... I think the state has to take a stand on this and say,
just,
look, the rules are the rules.
It's just so wasteful because it's going to their lawyers are trying to get into the European Court of human law as well, and they did apply throughout the years to reduce the structure itself, and it just all seems...
Why did they build it at the size they did?
Yeah, and she said she admitted to it being wrong, which obviously they knew it was wrong at the time. But I mean, look, it's happening.
I think any
now.
Other country, this wouldn't even be discussed.
Certainly not in Canada.
No, I'd say rules are rules, are they, in Canada?
Oh, yeah, which is why I like to live here.
Which is hence why Alison has the perspective on this that she has.
Too many rules aren't good either, right?
Oh, I think you're right. Too many rules aren't good. Ger, do you have a perspective on
it? I think, I totally understand. The country has been completely ruined. We don't spend enough on design. The city is choked. And if everybody's allowed to put up their stuff and if they have enough money to be able to continue fighting for it, then at the end you go, okay, fair enough, you beat us down. That doesn't work. But maybe at the very last minute you step in and go, okay, we're going to seize this now. Because if there is legal bills for all this, how are they going to pay for them? They're saying they actually don't have the money anymore. So maybe they could
send the bill to Mickey Mouse, is what they said.
Maybe they could have, like, the last minute, okay, we're stalling that, we're going to sue you for the money.
But isn't there issues about drainage and stuff like that as well? I think it's not quite as straightforward as just letting the house... I'm saying that, I need to double check that, but I from my recollection...
There was something to do with the land. Yes, there was an issue around the land.
Yeah, the actual quality of the land,
Having said that, they were living in a house on it... And didn't seem to, the people who were living on that land didn't seem to object.
How do we build on floodplains notoriously in this country?
I have less faith and reverence for our planning. I know you're saying we've driven a horse and four through it. I sometimes think our planners have gotten it completely wrong. And
in what way have our planners got it wrong?
I think the urban sprawl.
That's not our planners. That's the planning laws being ignored. That's councillors overriding them. That's actually not our planners. We actually don't even understand planning in this country, because we say things like the planners have got it wrong, not actually realising that the planners had nothing to do with those decisions. They were overridden. They've, in many cases, recommended against those very decisions.
I don't know.
Shane comes from a long line of planners, and he's getting
Shane, the planner. You're right. He has a conflict of interest.
Okay, sensitive. Sorry.
I've actually an insight into it. I think is what Kira means.
Yes,
conflict of insight. Sorry.
Right, we're going to take a break.
Yes, me too. We'll be back with more after this.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Ger and Alison are still with us on Winners and Sinners. Alison, what else do you want to throw into the mix today?
Okay, so I'm a massive fan of SNL, Saturday Night Live. It could be my mastermind topic, and I know not everyone is. But I loved it. Maybe it's
Alison Curtis, your chosen subject.
SNL. Anyway, so SNL UK starts.
I keep thinking you're saying S&M and then it ends in SNL. And yeah, sorry. No.
You just
sorry.
Have a one track point.
Sorry, it's several tracks. But
no. So anyway, it starts in the UK tomorrow. It's all cast. The basis of it is the same. Lorne Michaels is 80. He's, you know, giving it the green light. He's producing it. Tina Fey or production on it. And Tina Fey is the first host. And I think it's going to be... It'll be definitely worth checking out because it's going to follow the same formula. It's pretty much all unknowns to me that are the cast.
I don't recognize.
So.
I haven't recognized one of them so far. But so, then I might know. I mean, that doesn't mean
I thought
not.
I'd recognize one at least. But anyway, I'm going to be curious just because it's following the same
you
format.
You would hope that they, I mean, I'm sure they auditioned them and put them through
definitely.
Their paces and all
like
that.
They've won Edinburgh Fringe Festivals. Like, they've been part of comedy troupes. They're like writers on other shows. So,
and why is Tina Fey doing it if it's the UK version?
So she's the host.
Right.
As in, it was,
I suppose, give it a big name. Get a big
name.
This is
just her week, isn't it?
She was the first ever female head writer in SNL in the States. So, it's, you know, she's.
I just thought they were starting with a Brit.
Yeah. Well, Jamie Dornan is, well, not a Brit.
No, he's Irish. He's we'll take him.
So he's next week. So you're going to want to watch that
for sure.
Yeah. So they are. They just want to kickstart it with someone who had a real
big
connection
names.
To it.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. Alison, you're going to hate me, but I'm going to lay my cards on the table here. I
think they planned it well?
No. SNL. Anytime I've ever seen it, I just think it's crap.
You're not the first person to say it to me, but I think it's just because I loved it when I was in secondary, and then. When
so
I
it was
started
big in Canada as well. It went across.
Yeah. And it was like SCTV, the comedy. So John Candy, Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, they all came.
I mean, there's
those.
Some comic
so,
legends
yeah,
that were behind
and like,
it.
So I got into it, I suppose, just as Will Ferrell was kind of becoming a big... Well, I mean, I saw the 70s versions with Chevy Chase and all those guys who were insane while they were actually filming it. But I mean, some of it's hit and miss. And now... Maybe I shouldn't say this. Has it gone a little woke in the last few years? So where's the comedy gone? Like, anyway, I still like it.
It's big on social media, isn't it? The clips are
huge. Yeah. Their viewership
media.
Is still really big
is
as well.
It?
So.
I used to love, back in Trump's first presidency, and Melissa McCarthy used to play Sean Spicer, who actually I met. He was in News Talk at one stage. And she would... stand up and she would give these press conferences as Sean Spicer trying to justify Trump's actions. And I have to say... it was hilarious.
It's funny.
And she actually took it to the streets. She used to go around New York on a Segway as Sean Spicer, like heckling people. And
it was great.
It has had flashes of brilliance.
And Tina Fey played Sarah Palin really well. Like, that was a big thing as well.
Lipstick on a pig.
Tina Fey is brilliant.
She's class. Yeah. She actually is really, really funny.
Although, weirdly, 30 Rock hasn't dated as well, but that's a sidebar.
It would be really good if the UK version really good.
Yeah.
And I suspect it will be different because I often think UK... comedians and humor, it's not quite the same as American humor.
No, so, it's definitely not. So that's why I'm going to be curious to watch it, definitely. So it's tomorrow night.
I think it is worth
Sky
watching.
One.
Okay. Would you check it out after this chat show?
Yeah. Yeah,
just say yes.
Yes, 100%.
Desperately need it to be good.
His mouth says yes, but his eyes say no.
Welcome our new SNL overlords.
Our new robots, AI.
He is literally holding a gun to my head. Ger, what else have you got for the pot?
Yeah, Cillian Murphy is the latest interviewee on Smartless. I don't know if you're familiar with the Smartless podcast. It's Sean Hayes.
Is that Jason Bateman?
Jason Bateman.
And Will Arnett.
And Will Arnett, those three. And
it's very good and it's very funny.
It's great, yeah. Cillian Murphy comes across unbelievably well in it. He's curious about the three of them. They ask him a question and instead of like, the usual Hollywood thing is I'm here to tell my bits that I've practiced.
Engage in platitudes.
And he's genuinely interested in what they all have to say, which I was like, well, this is very unusual for this podcast. Normally it's somebody selling their movie, slightly reticent. At one point, Sean Hayes talks about his family are from Dingle and he's like, oh, it's one of my favourite places in the world. But he doesn't tell him he's got a cinema there. You know the way everybody else would be like, oh, I've got a cinema there.
One of the greatest cinemas in the country that he has rescued and he and his wife have rescued and are going to redevelop. And like, it's an amazing story.
Which
really
is exactly what everybody else in that scenario would have done. But he's so humble and just nice that he's not taking this as an opportunity. I was shocked.
He's the most... dare I say it, unlikely film star, isn't he? Because he is quite self-effacing. You know, you see him in interviews and he gives very little.
Yeah.
He holds a lot back. He is kind of reticent, as you say, but there's something self-effacing about him. He never trumpets himself at all.
No.
He's a deep thinker, isn't he, as well, though?
Most of my experience of watching him has been those short junkets where you see and he's like... and tearing off.
And there's all the memes of how, like, me when my children start telling me about what they did in school today, and it's Cillian Murphy staring at his knee or something. Yes. You know what I mean? You know the things I mean. Yeah,
so this was exactly the first time that I think that I kind of got to hear him be like that. And you come away from it going, he's the best of us. He's like,
I'm definitely going to listen to that one.
If we could all
then.
Be like that, I'd be pretty happy.
Definitely worth a listen anyway, this one.
Yeah, it's a really good pod recommendation.
Thank you indeed, Alison Curtis, to the FM. Gerard Gilway, of course, from Off the Ball. That's our lot for today.
It absolutely is, guys. Have a phenomenal weekend. Shane and I will be back on the airways 4 p.m. on Monday.
Stay tuned for Off the Ball. It's Bose versus Dundalk tonight, isn't it? Isn't that the feature?
Oh, you're conflicted?
No, I'm not conflicted, unfortunately.
He's all about the Bose.
Come on, the Bose. Tuara, agus tógá bogae.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.